Excuse me? On your feet when you address the court, sir.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Tasha M. Stevens with the law firm of Fuquay & Yorey, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Alyssa Rambo. If I may, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. First, I will provide a brief statement of the pertinent facts, then I will proceed to the arguments and the law in support thereof. The facts follow. On November 24, 2006, Antonio Malott reported a robbery in the area of Coverdale Crossroads in Sussex County, Delaware. He reported that while in his vehicle with his female passenger, two masked males approached his car, demanding that he give up his property. One of the masked men had a gun, and in an altercation outside of the car, shots were fired. Mr. Malott was not injured in that incident, and during his report, he expressed the belief that his female passenger was involved in the robbery. Detective Timothy Conway of the Delaware State Police investigated the incident. He identified the female passenger as Alyssa Rambo and interviewed her in her home on that same night. Miranda was not read at that interview. During that interview, according to the detective's notes, Alyssa stated that she believed the suspect was a gentleman who she previously heard state that he was going to rob Mr. Malott. She also stated that she was not involved in the crime.
But she was not in custody at that interview.
She was not in custody at that interview. It was in her home with her guardians. Then 4 days later, on November 28th, Detective Conway advised Rambo that she needed to report to Delaware State Police Troop Number 4. She arrived at the troop with her guardian and the friend of the family, 23-year-old Sheikah Cannon. Sheikah accompanies Alyssa in the interrogation room, and Detective Conway reads the Miranda warnings very quickly at the outset of the hearing. He asks during his reading of Miranda, "Do you understand the questions?" The interrogation is audio taped and there's no response heard. He proceeds and asks, having those rights in mind, "Do you wish to answer the questions?" He directs both questions to Sheikah and Alyssa. I think he uses the term "you guys." When he asks the second question, there's a single female voice that responds yes. At the suppression hearing, Detective Conway stated he was not sure who answered, but he conceded that prior he had revealed to me that Sheikah Cannon was the single voice.
What are the legal implications of that scenario you just described?
Alyssa Rambo has to waive her Miranda rights. If she's read her Miranda rights and she understands them, she should be the one to waive her Miranda rights. A family friend cannot waive a juvenile's Miranda rights.
Is the record clear that it's she or the family friend who responded?
The tape, it's not clear from the tape. Familiarity with voices, people surmise one thing or another, but the officer testified he wasn't sure of who it was, and then on the stand he said that he remembers telling me that it was Sheikah Cannon during a prior conversation.
Well, was there testimony from the officer about nonverbal communication, such as nodding of the head?
Yes, the officer did state that during the interview, Alyssa was nodding her head. But at the same time, this is the officer that stated he took notes during the interview of 11/24, and those notes were referred to in his probable cause statement, and those statements were inconsistent. And when he was asked, "Why does your warrant say that on the 24th she admitted to participating in the planning of a conspiracy to rob this gentleman, but your actual notes state that she denies it?" When I asked him about that inconsistency, he states, "I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm confused."
So how did the trial judge resolve that?
The trial judge simply found an implied waiver based on Sipple and D'Angelo.
Well, I mean, factually, what did the trial judge conclude?
The trial judge did not directly address it.
Help the court understand where this first argument is going to go in light of the second argument. You've raised two issues on appeal.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the second issue relates to this attempted murder charge, and the state concedes that should be reversed.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, if we agree with the state on that position, what's the relevance of this Miranda issue?
Ms. Rambo was also convicted of robbery first, possession of a firearm during commission of a felony, and conspiracy second. So even if that the attempted murder is thrown out, she's still facing these other charges, which she was convicted on based on these statements.
All right. But since those charges haven't been raised as an issue, is that what you're saying, that you've brought those charges to the court's attention as an issue in appeal with regard to that Miranda argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
So you want those other charges reversed based on the Miranda violation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you think the record's clear that if the statement is suppressed, that those charges can't stand on the basis of other evidence in the record?
Yes, Your Honor. The robbery first and the possession of the firearm during commission of a felony, she was convicted on those charges based on a conspiracy charge. And the statements that were made indicate planning, that she was in on planning. There was no other witness who could testify about planning. The co-defendants did not testify, only the officer who took the statements. I think another officer who was on the scene testified, but there was no other evidence presented as to the conspiracy.
When does the record reflect that it's apparent that there was confusion or ambiguity about Alyssa Rambo's response to her Miranda warnings?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
At what point does the record reflect, if it does, that there was ambiguity about either who responded or whether Alyssa responded at all to the Miranda warnings?
The only time that it was raised was during the suppression hearing. It was dealt with then. The judge simply said that even if there's no express waiver, that he relied on Sipple and D'Angelo to find an implied waiver.
Okay. Well, does our case law inform us at all on what the interrogator's responsibility is if there is some apparent ambiguity or confusion about a suspect's response to Miranda warnings?
There is in D'Angelo, there is a statement. It's not really about ambiguity, but it's a statement about silence. And it says, if there is silence in response to the question, then it must be, let me actually grab it. However, mere silence after the warnings are given does not constitute waiver. The courts must presume that a defendant did not waive his rights. The prosecution's burden is great, but in at least some cases, waiver can be clearly inferred from the actions and words of the person interrogated. So it turns to the action and words of the person interrogated if they're going to find an implied waiver. If there's ambiguity in another area of law with Miranda where there's a question about the invocation of the right to counsel, the court has said that the police must be scrupulous and determine whether this person is trying to invoke their right to counsel. So in this area directly, no, but on the outside there's been some kind of implication as to how it should be handled.
Can you help me with this statement in your brief, which the state apparently agrees with? The trial court ordered Alyssa held at Stevenson pending the outcome of this appeal. Has your client been adjudicated delinquent and sentenced?
Yes, she has.
So what is the sentence?
The sentence was 1 year at a facility, a level 5 facility. She is still being held at Stevenson. That sentence was stayed upon my motion.
Well, let me read to you from Garvey versus State, which was decided in April of 2005. Because of the inherently persuasive nature of in-custody interrogation, suspects express themselves in a variety of ways. Because under these circumstances, the speaker's true intent is unknown, clarifying ambiguities is vital to safeguarding the values embedded in the Fifth Amendment right to silence and the Sixth Amendment right to counsel. Now, while this isn't necessarily an ambiguity about interrogated suspect's invocation of the Miranda right, there's some ambiguity about whether or not this suspect understood and articulated a response to the Miranda warnings. Does the language that I read to you suggest any argument in the record to you about where we go from here?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that Garvey versus State actually says that really that we can't take a chance and say maybe or maybe not, but that we have to protect the Fifth Amendment rights, especially, I would say, of juveniles who are particularly vulnerable. We have to protect their rights and make sure there is definitely a waiver. And not, I'm not arguing that it always has to be an express waiver, but I am arguing that they have to understand their rights. There has to be a statement that they understand their rights.
Well, I'm not familiar with, perhaps my colleagues are, a fact situation similar to this before, but we've had situations more akin to where the individual is attempting to invoke Miranda rights, or at least one could argue that, but does so in such an ambiguous way that we have placed the responsibility on the interrogator to clarify that ambiguity before continuing the questioning. State versus Draper, where the person being interviewed said in response to whether you'd like to talk to us, basically, I'd like to talk to my mother first. And we said, you don't march on from there. You find out, is that an attempt to invoke Miranda or not? Is that attempt to remain silent or not? So this fact situation is very different, but is the principle the same?
I believe the principle is the same, Your Honor. The state does have the burden. We should place on them the onus to clarify. If you're making an audio tape statement, you should have audio tape answers. So that way it's clear and we don't have these questions. Instead of having to rely on the detective, who's a human being like me and who's infallible and whose credibility is at issue and whose memory may not always be reliable, if we have an audio tape statement and we don't have that response clearly from the person being interviewed, that creates a question and that presents this ambiguity. And I believe that the state does have the burden to clarify a situation like that. Instead of having it up there, maybe someone did raise their Fifth Amendment rights and then marching on and using it in court.
Well, in this case, quite apart from whether there was intimidation, coercion, overreaching that overawed the juvenile, or whether or not there's a bright-line legal rule about whether an adult can independently waive a juvenile's rights without any response from the juvenile at all, put those two issues aside, should there be a bright-line rule that says when the interrogator admits he's not sure who's responding to assert a waiver of Miranda rights, that there ought to be a bright-line rule to clarify it right then and there on the record before the interrogation continues?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is that a workable rule?
Yes, Your Honor. That would instill confidence in the community as to them being respected as defendants when they're in that position. I believe that's the purpose of Miranda.
In this case, was there ever a written waiver of Miranda?
There was no written waiver.
You know, we've spent a lot of time on an argument, and you spent a lot of time in your brief on a different argument. So if you want to move on to the intimidation and coercion aspect of your argument, feel free to do so.
Your Honor, on the coercion issue, we just submit that her statement was not voluntary. The statement was secured without any statement of understanding or any statement that she wished to proceed with the interview. And then the whole interview is preceded with about, I tried to time it numerous times, I estimate 15 to 20 minutes of the detective stating to her, making statements like, you need to cooperate with me, I need you to say you were involved, no jury on God's green earth is going to believe that you weren't, I'm in control of the situation, you're at my mercy. Numerous statements, and it wasn't just one or two, but it's problematic, probably one or two is problematic for me, but that they're so numerous and that it was such a long period of time where these statements were being told to her. There was an erroneous statement about accomplice liability where it stated you're an accomplice because you were there and because you didn't try to prevent the action from happening and because you didn't cooperate with the police, that makes you an accomplice. So when I think of a 14 years and 4 months old defendant in an interrogation where she hasn't expressed that she wishes to speak, she hasn't expressed that she understands to the officer, he perceives, and then all of a sudden she starts agreeing with him or making statements, incriminating statements were made. Some of them are very confusing. They could be construed either way, but nevertheless, some of those statements were in fact used against her. that is coercive. I believe that the statements that were made on the 24th, the difference after he made his initial statements, the difference in her statement showed that there was overreaching. It caused her to succumb or acquiesce to the story that he wanted to hear, because he expressly said, I need you to say this. You need to tell me this.
You want to save the balance of your time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. If I may first apologize for my previous impertinence. May I please...
Well, we didn't take it as impertinence, but you just have to remember that that's the Delaware custom.
Thank you, Your Honor.
No one's offended by it.
May I please the Court, James Wakely, on behalf of the State of Delaware. Alyssa Rambo was, and likely remains, an intelligent, streetwise teenager who is not intimidated by authority, who is not naive, who is not shy, and who has an extensive history, as the judge found, with law enforcement.
Now, what did the judge find? All of the above that you just cited, or just that she has an extensive criminal history?
The judge found that she was not intimidated by authority figures based on the testimony of Stokes, her probation officer, and Kim Mitchell, the assistant principal at her school. She was in normal classes. This was all submitted in the record. The judge also found that Detective Conway, in both the first and second interviews with Ms. Rambo, was more than accommodating to the family. In both cases, the grandmother, who I believe was the guardian, although it's unclear in the record, was informed that Ms. Rambo was being questioned about this specific set of circumstances. In the second and likely more important interview, Detective Conway informed her that this could lead to an arrest, and asked the grandmother to bring Ms. Rambo over to the police station.
Can you cite a case either from the federal system or a Delaware case that suggests that Miranda may be waived by unilateral parental action or unilateral family friend action with no articulated oral response from the juvenile?
I believe that would be an incorrect statement of law as to the federal and state case law. I cannot name a case that would be to the contrary.
Well, what happened here in light of that?
Well, there is some ambiguity as to who actually answered yes on the tape.
Okay, now what does the Delaware case law inform us about what should happen in the event of an apparent ambiguity of that kind?
Well, nothing of that specific type. There are cases where, as Your Honor noted, someone makes some statement that is ambiguous that they may wish to invoke their right.
Okay.
And just pointing off a case off the top of my head from the United States Supreme Court, Fair versus Michael C.
Well, be careful with the federal law, because as I understand our case law, we've made it clear that there is a more careful scrutiny of that waiver under Delaware law than under federal law.
Yes, and understanding, Your Honor, that it's a slightly different circumstance, if there had been any reluctance here, any suggestion that she wished to speak with anybody about this, any hesitancy in answering the questions, I am fairly well convinced, based on the detective's testimony, that he would have stopped the interview and sought further.
Let's go for a minute to your first point, that there may be some principled difference between someone articulating words that are an ambiguous invocation of the Miranda right and someone not responding but sitting as a juvenile while an adult family friend responds for them, that they're willing to waive their right. What is the principled difference between the two?
Well, an explicit waiver is certainly more... it's more useful.
Well,
for the record,
if it came from this interrogated person.
Yes.
But this fact situation doesn't show that it was clear that the juvenile actually waived Miranda rights. The family, adult family friend apparently did. And whether that was apparent at the time of the interview or not is somewhat unclear, but it seems later in testimony that the police officer acknowledged that the response did not come from the juvenile.
Well, my recollection of the record is that he responded to Ms. Stevens' question that if that's what you're saying I told you, then I agree with that. To the question, didn't you tell me?
Well, where do we go with that? There are two ways to look at that. He's either extraordinarily candid or he's extraordinarily disingenuous in the response, one or the other. And either way, where does that get him?
Well, reading the transcript and having listened to the tape, it would strike me that he's likely more candid than disingenuous.
Surprise answer. Thank you.
The detective testified that if he wasn't sure that she was waving, he wouldn't have proceeded. She was nodding during this whole proceeding, according to his testimony, during this whole interview. And again,
does that mean? That she was going nodding off to sleep or that she was communicating?
I believe it was nodding along with his questions.
And we should assume by nodding means nodding in the affirmative and not nodding in the negative.
I don't know if we can assume that. I would suggest that that would be beneficial to the state.
It also might be beneficial to have a bright line rule that says if you're the one conducting the interrogation, you be alert to possible difficulties with whether or not there's been a knowing voluntary waiver of Miranda and cure them on the spot. Therefore, you don't create issues for appeal and you don't create issues surrounding whether or not somebody has knowingly voluntarily waived their Miranda rights. Should we have such a bright line rule?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's necessary. Certainly,
in your experience, and don't the police generally follow up a verbal waiver with a written waiver to confirm the waiver?
That would be my experience. I don't know why it didn't take place here. The fact is, after reading the Miranda right, the detective again questioned, and I believe it was Ms. Rambo, do you understand you can stop at any time? If you don't want to answer these questions, you don't have to. And then proceeded, and she never again stopped. And as the judge found, none of these instances of potentially coercive statements were in any way abusive. They were in no way attempting to intimidate her into giving a specific response.
Well, you know, one of the difficulties, and maybe it simply arises from the fact that we see appeals on the record, but one of the ways of avoiding these difficulties is to note that there's not an affirmative oral response that you can, as an interrogator, note in your notes for purposes of a later report or whatever, that the answer may have come from Sheikha, it may have come from Ms. Rambo. I'm not really clear at the moment. But instead of just moving on without clarifying it, and relying on nods, whatever that means, you make it perfectly clear in the record at that point, and you preserve the right to introduce that statement later. How much of an imposition is it on the police to ask them to do that for the sake of clarity and for the sake of fairness generally?
Certainly that would be that's a reasonable request. It's unclear what the circumstance in the interview room was. Was it?
I know, but it leads to the inference here that there could be two reasons why the police officer didn't do it. One, sloppy police work. Two, fear that if he did clarify it, he wouldn't get the response he wanted. He would get, in fact, an invocation clearly and straightforwardly of the Miranda right and have to stop the interrogation. How much of a risk taker should this court be in that respect?
Well, Your Honor, the reason that we have an implied waiver rule is specifically to counter situations in which we have no explicit waiver one way or the other. She was informed of her rights more than once. She was told she could stop. She was sitting there with an interested adult for an interrogation period that was no longer than 30 minutes.
Yeah, but you can't give us a case that says having an interested adult, I don't care if it's a representative of the ACLU there, forget about that, family friend or otherwise. How much mustard does that cut if you don't have an oral response from the person that's being interrogated?
Well, it cuts at least as far as the totality of the circumstances analysis goes, that is, that has been held in numerous jurisdictions that having an interested adult there is one element of ensuring that this is a fair waiver.
What's the leading case you would rely on for this implied waiver rule?
If I may refer to my brief, Your Honor. I apologize.
Well, if it's in your brief, we can find it.
It's page 6.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. I apologize that I'm a little lost, Your Honor.
That's fine. We'll find it.
I believe it is in my brief.
And what are the facts that we would use to support the implied waiver, the fact that she just sat there?
Well, she sat there. She nodded along with the question. She answered them freely without hesitance. And I would encourage Your Honors, if it is not the common practice, to listen to the tape. She answers along. This is not an abusive interrogation by any means. Certainly reading on the cold record the statements cited by Ms. Stevens, some of them did indeed cause me pause. However, if you listen to them in the context of the tape and of the interrogation, this was not an abusive interrogation.
I found in the record a reference to the defendant stating in some way or communicating that she understood her rights. That's at A17. And did she acknowledge in any way that she understood? Yes. And how did she do that? By shaking her head through the interview or, you know, a verbal yes or whatever. But where in the record is there a statement that she wished to speak to the officer or was willing to speak to the officer?
There was no explicit statement to that effect other than she continued to do so.
Is there anything in the testimony of the officer, similar to what I just read, addressing the willingness to talk to the detective?
Nothing, not as far as I'm aware. However, given the fact that she had already been questioned on this specific set of circumstances once before in her grandparents' home, and she was informed prior to coming that this again would be the topic of conversation between she and Detective Conway, certainly, if she did not wish to speak, she was more than aware that she could do so. And given the testimony from her probation officer and from her principal, she was not one who would hesitate to do so. If she chose to say, I don't want to speak, she was in no way shy about doing so.
Well, is it your position there's an implied waiver every time there is a question which is answered?
Certainly not. There are answers that can be given that would suggest further inquiry is necessary. This court has found questions such as responses, or at least considered responses such as, well, I'll answer what I want to. And even though in that particular case, and I don't recall the name off the top of my head, this court found that the waiver was sufficient by his continuing to speak. Certainly there are responses that would indicate you need to go a little further. There were no such responses here.
What about the let's assume this case is going to focus on whether or not there was an implied waiver and whether or not the trial judge analyzed the facts sufficiently for us to be confident that he didn't abuse his discretion when he so found. What's your take on the prefatory remarks that the police officer made for what your colleague suggests is 15 to 20 minutes? In the nature of the comments made to a 14-year-old, however street smart, when a family friend adult has already told the police officer that she was willing to talk, and then all this prefatory comment. What's your take on that? Do we normally find that kind of language in an implied waiver case?
Not that I've seen, but typically the record is fairly sparse, in, at least in the opinions that I read. It would be the state's opinion that that's of no moment here. The detective was clearly treating Ms. Rambo with kid gloves. He was explaining to her, this is what's going on, this is what's happening. 20 minutes of preparatory is probably a bit too much, but the detective seemed to just be trying to comfort her that this, I'm trying to help you out, and this is standard police practice as far as
you would characterize that language, if we were to look at it carefully, as comforting language, making her feel at ease.
No, certainly. I wouldn't say
what do you mean by trying to comfort her?
Well, not. I misspoke. Maybe not trying to comfort her, but letting her know what the situation was and getting her comfortable in the interrogation room. That these are the circumstances. There wasn't anything in there that was an explicit error of law.
But you disagree with Ms. Stevens' remarks concerning accomplice liability?
Yes, Your Honor. The detective specifically said, admittedly a sparse and rather low-level explanation of accomplice liability in deference to a 14-year-old who you're explaining it to, but if she's a part of what's gone on, if she took any part in it, she is guilty as an accomplice under the law. The detective had the statement from the victim that she reached over and turned the car off. And then these two men came up to the side. That's certainly a suggestion that she knew what was going to happen. Otherwise, she wouldn't have reached over and turned off the car.
So let me read to you some of the comforting language. You're involved in this right up to your neck, whether you want to be or not. And now you have to crawl your way out. And in order to crawl your way out, you've got to be 100% honest with me and trust me, okay? Because if you don't trust me, you're going down, and that's all I can say. Yeah. You think most 14-year-olds would take comfort from that language?
I apologize for my misspeaking. No, I don't.
However, do you find that language at all intimidating or coercive?
In listening to the tape, the tone of voice that he's using, no, I don't. Certainly on a cold reading of the record, that could be both abusive, the law and order style interrogation.
Yeah, reminds me of Andy Sipowicz. If you recall the television show.
Yes. It's not. The tape is very clear. The detective is not overreaching, and the judge found that the detective was not overreaching. The fact is he was telling her these are the facts, these are the circumstances. This is what's going to happen if you continue to say you didn't take any part in this. You are the best witness. That's accurate. When the detective says, and quite frankly, when I read the transcript of this, the only statement that gave me real pause was, you're at my mercy. And when you read that statement in context, it's clear that what the detective was speaking of was that she was at his mercy to the extent that he was going to tell the prosecutor whether she was cooperative or not. And if you listen to the way it was said on the tape, this was in no way threatening. The detective almost sounds as if this was an afterthought statement rather than something he was using to coerce a statement out of her.
If there is a Miranda violation here, is it harmless or not?
I would suggest not, Your Honor. The judge makes it fairly clear that the statement took a significant part in his decision. It would be difficult for the state to credibly argue that it was not a harmless error if it was admitted. The fact is that the state did have testimony from the victim that she reached over and turned off the car, that she had prior knowledge of the offense, knew who was involved, at least.
Did she turn off the car or take the keys out of the ignition?
I believe she turned off the car and took the keys out of the ignition, but I could be wrong. I apologize if I am. The fact is that within this totality of the circumstances, we have a streetwise, intelligent, not easily intimidated 14-year-old teenager who never even remotely suggested that she wanted to speak with anybody else. The circumstances of the interrogation are in no way onerous, and the state would suggest that the court can clearly find an implied waiver of the Miranda right here.
Now, in terms of elements of an implied waiver, what are they? I mean, when is there an implied waiver and when is there not?
There's never, at least as far as I could determine, there were never a specific set of factors laid out. I would suggest that the factors that you could consider here are nodding along with the questioning, showing no reluctance to answer the questions, answering freely, and participating in the interview with the detective. I understand this may be duplicative, but the fact is that there was no suggestion here that she wanted to stop.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the Court? Your Honors, if I may address the issue of implied waiver that's been discussed. Implied waiver requires words and conduct to show that the person intends to relinquish a known right. In the cases that have been cited, the trial court relied on Sipple and D'Angelo, and both of those are Superior Court cases. And Sipple actually refers to Connecticut versus Aversa, and in that court, the reasoning that they found an implied waiver was not just because the defendant answered questions, but because during the custodial interrogation, he expressed that he understood his Miranda rights. D'Angelo cites four cases, Gorham versus Franson, and those facts also state that the defendant stated that he understood those rights. And D'Angelo states, in State versus Aversa, there were two occasions on which the defendant stated that he understood the Miranda warnings. Also, it refers to Faulkner versus State, a Texas case, and those facts say that there was an affirmative statement by the defendant relating that he understood his rights. And I would say that Delaware feels comfortable in allowing an implied waiver in cases where there are words and conduct. So those words are very important. The words that say, I understand my rights, and then you also look at the conduct. It's not an and-or analysis. It's an and analysis.
Well, how are we to read the... And did she acknowledge in any way that she understood? Yes. How did she do that? By shaking her head through the interview, or, you know, a verbal yes or whatever? I mean, what doesn't that, can the trial judge infer from that or decide as a matter of fact that there was a affirmative nod in at the time of the question being asked, do you understand?
Well, I would just assert that it's words and conduct. He's relying on conduct, saying she was nodding her head.
So nodding, even if it was absolutely clear, for instance, on a videotape, that someone was nodding yes, that's not enough?
Not according to the law, no. It's words and conduct. I would place the onus on the state to say, you're nodding your head. Does that mean yes? The person should respond yes, respond verbally. In this case, we don't really have that luxury. We're relying on an audio tape statement. So I'm not sure that there was nodding. He refers to nodding of the head, and then in the suppression hearing, he refers to shaking of the head. So both can be understood differently, nodding as yes, shaking as no. I'm not sure what happened at that interview.
Well, what we do know is the family court judge chose to believe him.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have to be convinced there's some reason to conclude that the record doesn't support that conclusion of the family court judge before we could disagree, correct?
No, Your Honor, to de novo review.
Well, well with the factual finding about the significance of the nod, is that de novo?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, if she was shaking no and the adult with her says yes, you would think the record, the recording would reflect the officer noting a disagreement between her actions and the adult's words, wouldn't you?
Not necessarily. In a case where the officer didn't even put on the record, you're nodding your head, you responded yes. If there's no verbal answer and you know it's being audiotaped, I believe the officer should have said, I'll note that the defendant is nodding her head. Or in his notes, which were made contemporaneous, there are notes from the interview, he would note she's nodding her head or she understands her rights. Some kind of indication in either his written or the oral tape that the defendant has expressed an understanding or is showing me or that I understand that she wishes to waive her rights and understands her rights.
Well, can you give us quickly in the last 30 seconds the case that stands for the proposition that there must be both an oral response and a response physically or otherwise in order for there to be a valid waiver?
Yes, Delaware versus D'Angelo, and that's 2000 Del Super Lexus 62. It refers to Sipple also, and the site to Sipple is...
Well, I'll find it. I just want to make sure that there was a Delaware case that said that explicitly.
These are the two Superior Court cases.
Yes, the Superior Court cases. And it says words and conduct, and from there I looked at the cases that Delaware relied on in saying we're going to acknowledge an implied waiver and found that in each case there were words required.
Okay, thank you very much, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.